It's wonderful to be back here again. And greetings from Minnesota. Where we're amused by your school closings. I'm here with my son, John, who's visiting. And at John's school, the rule had been that if it was below minus 20, they wouldn't have the kids wait for buses and go out for recess. But it was below 15, it was fine. But then, last year, it was below minus 20 so many times that they had to give up on that and just have them go to school anyways. And now the rule pretty much is if you can cross-country ski near the school and then climb over the wrecked school buses to the entrance of the school, it's okay. But this is a special place. And it's a place that has encouraged me and guided me and sent me to do things that I never thought I would do. And I'm eternally grateful for the support and the love of the people here. And we'll talk more about that at the forum afterwards. I think when I read the gospel passage for this morning, I was so struck by what Jesus says. When he says, if you want to follow me, deny yourself and take up your cross. Because he says, your cross, not my cross. That we each have a cross, a weight that we have to carry. When I taught at Baylor for 10 years down in Texas, there was a guy there who used to literally carry a cross, this 8-foot wooden cross. I think eventually he put wheels on the back. But you'd see him on campus, just you wouldn't see him. It looked like a cross moving along, and then you'd see the legs beneath it. He was obscured by the cross that he carried. And when I think of Jesus saying this, that guy's mission, whatever it was, sure worked on me because I see him. I see that vision of the literal weight of a cross to bear. That makes it difficult to walk, difficult to get where you need to go, makes you look stupid in the eyes of people driving by on University Parks Road. Deny yourself is what Jesus says. Selflessness hasn't exactly been a core American value of late. We seek to be famous. We celebrate those that we elevate as heroes, sometimes for reasons that are pretty hard to explain. I'm still not sure why the Kardashians are famous. And they're not the only ones that baffle me. But we have a culture that trains us to believe something, and that is that when we do our greatest good thing, that they'll have a parade for us. You know, in the Star Wars movies, at the end of it, after they destroy the Death Star or whatever goes on, they always go back to their home planet and there's a parade and the Ewoks are dancing. Often they're presented with a glowing orb, whatever that's for, which I've never understood. But, you know, even just watching the Oscars last weekend and the way that that plays out, that we watch that show, and I know for myself, I'm thinking of what my speech would be, what I would say that would be better than this guy who can't seem to choke it out and remember the name of his agent. because that position of being the person walking up to accept the award, we see that as a goal. But that's not really what happens when we follow Jesus. And that's what Jesus is promising here. Is not you're going to get a parade. And that's a hard lesson to hear. That our secret hope of having the parade isn't what our faith is going to award us with. Because this faith, the one that we've chosen, the one that you've chosen to drive through the ice to be a part of today, it's transgressive. It was transgressive then, 2,000 years ago, and it's transgressive now if we believe in it, if we live it out. It takes us to places that are dangerous, where we're not liked, and sometimes where people die. just as happened with each of the followers that Jesus was talking to. Jean Bishop is here, and her book came out this week. It's a remarkable book. It's called Change of Heart. And you've done a good job in the cover blurbs from John Grisham. But it's a hard book to read in some ways because it tells the story of the terrible murder of Jean's sister and brother-in-law and their unborn child. And the senseless murder by a 16-year-old who didn't steal anything. But that's not really what the heart of the story is. This is a story about Jean Bishop learning to forgive him in that difficult journey. A journey that I would add took place in part in this church, something that's described in the book. Know how special you are when you read this book. Because it was in this church, right there, that for the first time since that murder in 1990, she said the name of the killer, David Biro. She'd resolved not to honor her sister and dishonor him. But as part of forgiving, she did that. Another thing that she did when she started to change her heart, or the Holy Comforter began to change her heart, is that she wrote a piece for CNN that also had Change of Heart in the title, that talked about the steps she'd taken to that point. And one of the things she describes in the book that really is consistent with what Jesus promises in this passage is what she read in the comments section to this piece she wrote about Christian forgiveness. Some of the comments were, "Your sister's murderer went to the wrong house. He should have went to yours. Anyone who would give that piece of shit another chance to do that to another family is mentally unbalanced. Jean, please stay out of criminal justice system. Do not pollute it. Repulsive. If believing in this mythical ghost named Jesus makes one work for the release of the cold-blooded killer of your family, then someone needs to slap reason back into you. Your mind is diseased. Your dead relatives, whose graves you have now spat upon, are turning over in their graves at your cowardice and betrayal." Other people called her cold-hearted, unhealthy, weak-minded, sicko, cruel, disgusting, and also one person called her a pea-head. That's what happens when you follow Christ to hard places. Now, being reviled doesn't mean that we're right. And I want to make that clear. The fact that people disagree with us and insult us, persecute us, hurt us, that on its face doesn't mean that we're right. Though when we are right, we are reviled. Too often in our society, sometimes people take an unpopular view and then say that the unpopularity means that it's right. And it's complicated. But do know that there's such a deep truth in that passage that we read today. And that leads to the question, when these things happen, what do you do? I wrote a piece for CNN in 2012 called "The Christian Case for Same-Sex Marriage." And it got 15,000 comments, 14,999 of which were negative. Thank you, Craig. But a lot of them were anonymous and under pseudonyms. The braver people wrote to me directly. I always admire that if someone has something to say that they write to me directly. And the first one that I got, before I even knew the piece was up, it was like 12:02 a.m., and I get an email, and there's only one word, idiot. They got more lengthy after that. People had more time to respond, I guess. But what do we make of it when the haters gotta hate? You know, when I think about it, it's hard not to be angry when you read reactions like that, when I read the comment sections to what Gene writes. And sometimes what I think is this. Boy, are these people poor in spirit. They're poor in spirit. But then, where's that phrase come from? It's that part of the Beatitudes that we always want to chop off. We want to have Jesus saying, blessed are the poor. But he's saying, blessed are the poor in spirit. And that's the way of this faith too. That even the haters are blessed, are deserving of our love. The people who insult us are worthy of love. When John and I were in Williamsburg yesterday, one of the things I was explaining to him was that the stocks weren't an amusement. It wasn't something that children posed in for pictures. That street was full of horse manure. And what you were supposed to do when the person was locked in the stock was pick some of that up out of the street and fling it at them as they were locked in, helpless. And yet Christ calls us to love the people that are fleeing the manure, because they are blessed too and should be blessed by us. And that's a hard thing to hear. But sometimes, if that breaks us, if it hurts us, that is part of the whole too, in a way. Because it's only as broken people that we're approachable and lovable. I asked Jean for permission to tell this story. It's one she told me one of the times we were here before. When she was in college, she was at Northwestern University, and she was a journalism student at Medill, which is the best journalism program in the country. People from all over try to get in, and she was one of the lucky few. Her sophomore year, she was in a sorority, Theta, where the beautiful, perfect girls were. And they had good clothes. They were smart. Quarter of them were in the program where you finish medical school and undergrad in only 6 years. And they exuded perfection to one another and to the community. And Jean got a great job during one of the trimesters. She was going to work in a newspaper in Macon, Georgia, and she went down to Macon and rented an apartment. And this was in the winter. And there was only a space heater. And she didn't know this, but the space heater was leaking gas. And she was in her apartment one day and was overwhelmed by the natural gas, by the propane, and passed out. She was only saved because someone happened to check in on her for the only the reason that she felt compelled to do so at that moment, or else she would have died. She didn't die, but she did because she fell next to the heater, suffered terrible burns. Third-degree burns from her shoulder down past her elbow. They required extensive skin grafts. And when she went back to school, she wasn't perfect anymore. She was broken. She couldn't wear a dress with short sleeves without everyone seeing that harm, that hurt, that brokenness. But something happened. And I've carried this story with me. And that is that when she was broken, when she wasn't perfect anymore, even in the community of perfect people, one by one, people came to her and talked about their own brokenness, talked about their hurt, physical and emotional. There was something about letting it be known that this hurt was there, that it was true, that it was real, that allowed others to be imperfect. And we all are But in the end, as we suffer for Christ, if we choose to, those imperfections make us whole. Our scars are a blessing, and grace is our calling.